Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
This is our February 7th reviews issue. I'm one of your hosts, Pat, and with me is...
Matt.
And we have a couple comics for you this week. First, we have Martian Manhunter overall review.
Woo-hoo.
Protector number one. But first, we have The After Realm number one. This is written and drawn by Michael Avon Deming, or Oeming. Sorry. I can't tell with this font.
Yeah, it's Oeming. It's an O, not a D.
There we go, yes. And colored by Taki Selma. So this is a oversized quarterly comic book from Image.
Yay!
So, what'd you say it was? 60 pages?
It's something like that. It's like 60, 62.
Yeah, and this is a high fantasy, mythic... beginning to an epic of elves and realms and gods and men.
And Ragnarok and the potential for our world and...
Yeah. A lot of potential for our world, especially considering on the cover there's a boat and skyscrapers.
Yeah, there's some spoilery stuff on the back that show, like, arcade cabinet stuff and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
What the heck? Yeah, apocalypse type stuff. She's riding an ostrich with a machine gun.
Right, like that's a little different, right?
Yeah, a little different than crafting your own spear
and having a magical goat.
Yeah, a magical goat. You always have to have the snarky spirit sidekick.
Right.
In fantasy books.
Yeah, and this is definitely her reflecting on like the beginning of this journey.
Yes.
In the beginning, it starts that way.
I was reading... Did you read the afterword?
I didn't read the afterword.
Yeah, he said that issues 1 and 2 of this are specifically the introduction of Una Lightfoot as a character.
Cool.
So I think it's going to be very focused on her for the first... for at least the first two issues, and then...
Okay.
Pull back a little bit as more of an overarching story once she's established, essentially.
Right.
I mean, we already get a lot of the story anyway. Loki escaping.
Yeah. That's
ostensibly going to be the main...
Crux of the story.
Yeah, crux. Thank you.
Well, and then the dice iconography, which is, like, definitely going to play into our world, that there's somehow magic dice that can... Some sort of a locator beacon.
Yes. I love that. Did you see on the last page, it says some influences of the After Realm. It's ancient mysteries, mythology, Dungeons and Dragons, 80s arcade.
Yeah.
And you can definitely see all of those pulling through strong in this. Dungeons and Dragons, especially with the dice and, you know, elves. And she's specifically trying to be a ranger too, which is
awesome. I really liked the fact that we're in Norse mythology specifically, and spending more time with the elves in Norse culture, because you know we're so used to, with Thor being as big as it is, we see the realm of gods and like the realm of the ice giants, but we don't see a lot of the realm of the elves.
I don't know if it's specifically Norse, though, because there's a little... I was getting a little bit of, like, dryad-y influence.
Which, and I don't know if, like, the...
And yeah, I don't know how much crossover there's to
right.
have.
Well, and, like,
specifically.
Loki almost has a dry look to him,
too. Yeah, because he has the antlers and...
Like, his minions look like wood people. Like,
yeah.
There's a really cool design in this. Like, the weird... Almost Batman the Animated Series, you know, Michael Oeming's art has always had that sort of look, the strong, simplified lines. But there's so much stuff going on in the background and things. It's just really, like, cool compositions.
Yeah, it's, like, deceptively simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's extremely... Once you start looking at panels, it's extremely complex, but kind of from a distance, it looks very cartoony.
Yeah.
And... Yeah.
I think it allows the story to breathe really well. I really like the art in this book. I'm really a huge fan.
Yes, I did. And I liked, I really liked the paneling and the transition between, this is like really nerdy stuff, but he does a lot of, gosh, I'm forgetting like the poetic term for it. It's essentially enjambment where he ends lines in the next panel.
Okay.
A lot, like, the character's dialogue and narration trails off a lot. There's a lot of ellipses, and then in following panels.
Which is, that's...
That ends, and it's... I don't know, at first I was like, is it too much? Is it not, is it, because it happens almost every page.
Which is funny, because I didn't notice it, but then again, it's a reading tool, right? Like, it's something that you do to make sure that the panel flows to the next one, you know?
Yeah, like here, like, just this one page, there's three different instances.
Oh, yeah.
Of...
The conversation continues on the next panel.
Yeah, so it's literally drawing you into the next panel. And not only that, but it's very good panel layout as well. So it's...
Yeah, nothing it's like...
Like, technically an addictive read.
Right. Well, and it's interesting, too, because I'm always more of a fan of people who aren't breaking the panel rules. But he does it in such a way that it's easy to read and easy to follow. So when he does do the breaks, it's because it's like a huge moment in the story where breaking the panel layout actually shows you the chaos of what's happening in the scene. Yeah. I mean, he's an experienced penciler inker, you know, like, this guy's been working in comics for a long time.
Yeah.
So he worked with Bendis on Powers, you know, he's co-creator of Powers with Brian Michael Bendis. So this is, I really like this. This is a great, like, first issue. Knowing, like, jumping into mythology, I like the fact that it's quarterly. It's going to give me some time, and I'm going to really savor and enjoy. And reading two together is going to be like reading a trade paperback. You know, you're going to read two books. And be, ooh, cool. Like, this is the next story.
Yeah, because it's almost like two or three issues.
Yeah,
in one book. So yeah, good bang for your buck. Great story. Great art.
Yeah.
Michael Avon Deming.
Oming.
Oming. Sorry, I keep looking at the cover.
You know what? The cover does look like a D.
It's bad print for his last name.
Needs to be a little roundier.
Yeah. Cool. Well, why don't we get into the
next
one? Yeah.
All right. We have Protector number one. This is from Image Comics. It is co-written by Simon Roy and Daniel Benson with art by Artyom Trakhanov. I hope I said that correctly. This is definitely a potential alternate future. It takes place in 3241 AD, and it is definitely after the fall of mankind and, like, the fall of technology. We're dealing with it seems like it's almost an Aztec culture. Like, I can't, and because there's, like, Aztec, like, versus cowboys almost feel to the story.
It takes place in the Great Lakes region.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Once again, did you read the afterword?
No.
Oh my goodness.
Although the first page says Great Lakes region of North America.
Yes, but that's there's also a map in there too.
Okay.
So yeah, I think it takes a lot of, like, ripping off current American culture as well as not specifically Aztec. I was thinking more like Great Lakes region Indians.
Oh, okay.
Iroquois.
I believe. You are probably more accurate in that instance.
At least that's what I was getting out of that. But yeah, great. I mean, while we're on the subject of looks for a minute, great art in this
Holy
book.
Shit.
Great art.
I had been following this artist on Twitter for a while, and I somehow missed that this was coming out, and boy, it's nuts. Like, there's such a, he has such a weird, this is so artsy. He has a weird note, or a nose theory. Like, the way that he draws noses is very cartoony and, like, bulbous.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, like, broken line and just sort of wherever the line lands. It's also cartoony, you know? Like, it's not meant to be realistic. Characters are definitely, you know, caricatured and larger than life or small if they need to be. But there's a lot of emphasis on clothing and the design, and
it's one of the most abstract styles I've seen in a while.
Yeah,
like, realistic or it's on the cartoonier side of the spectrum, but I would say it's almost halfway between that and, like, pure abstraction.
Right. Well, because so much, like, there's so much put into the attire of the characters, mm-hmm. and, like, making it work. It's really weird. So I'm playing Zelda Breath of the Wild for the, like, my first true playthrough of the game. And seeing the Miyazaki influence in so many things, and this feels the same way. Like, there's sort of a Nausicaa-esque thing that's happening here with the mustachioed old man and the, like, old technology that the people don't understand and are interpreting as gods. It's fascinating.
Yeah. And just a quick thing that I love about this, by the way, and it's such a minor detail, but there's a gossherd.
There's a what?
A gossherd.
Okay.
Or a gossherd, or whatever. The little kid who's herding the geese.
Oh, okay.
They refer to him as a gossherd. I don't know why, but that's...
It's like, a nice detail.
Yeah, and also herding geese.
Yeah.
Apparently that's what you do in the dystopian future.
You don't just run away from them or try to get them out of there. You herd them. I also love the names of the tribes. The Yankee.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's spelled very, it's Y-A-N-Q-U-I, but I mean, it's the Yankees.
Yeah.
And then there's the Hudsoni, so the Hudson River people, the Hudson Bay. So, the Anglo, mm-hmm. I mean, you can't get more obvious than that.
And I think if I remember correctly, the Anglo are like the pariah tribe, essentially. Yeah. Everybody's all, oh, you're from the Anglos? Stay away from me. I don't want to get sick.
Right. It's really interesting. Like, it's just a there was definitely a full, there's got to be a full Bible of, like, the rules of this world at some point.
Oh, yeah. What is it? Almost three pages of
afterword content. Four, because there's a map, too.
Yeah. And... Yeah, so, yeah, if this is just what we get in one issue, then I'm sure there has to be at least another entire comic book full of just notes.
It's, I'm really excited. I can't wait for people to check out issue 2 as well.
Yeah.
So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I'm really excited. Yeah, because you said you read issue 2 already.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's all you can say. That's all I can say. Legally, on air.
Yeah.
So, Image, please don't sue us. We love you too much to be in a legal battle with you.
Right.
Anyway, before we get into hot water here, let's move on to our final review. This is an overall review of the 12-issue maxi series, Martian Manhunter, written by Steve Orlando.
With art by Riley Rossmo.
Woo! To both of those people.
Yay! Yeah. Wow. How bizarre.
This whole book, I've been wanting exactly this from almost the moment I started reading comics.
Which is so funny because I don't think I could have ever contemplated exactly this.
See, I just had in my mind the vague idea of a Martian Manhunter origin story where he's a beat cop thinking about, like, his old life.
As a beat cop.
I didn't even have that, okay. That much. That was just a story in my head that I was like, I really want to see this. I didn't know how that was gonna look, how it would be, but for some reason, Martian Manhunter, that for me just made sense. And I've always loved him as a character. Yeah. One of the most underutilized characters, I think, in the DC pantheon.
Yeah, seriously, for somebody who seems, he's so important to, like, the Justice League, you know, like, mm-hmm. he seems so identifiable as the Justice League character.
Yeah.
And you don't see him enough. And
hardly ever.
No.
And I don't know when the last time he had a solo series was, if ever.
No, he has. I don't know. He had a New 52 series.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, okay. And there's been, like, series of, like, minis through the past. But this is, like, this is so singular and definitive about what it is trying to tell and, like, the history of Martian culture and the Martian obsession with humanity and, like, being basically a TV show for them kind of thing. Like,
yeah, I guess they didn't have a good entertainment or visual entertainment industry on Mars.
Yeah. Well, and then the introduction of, like, different Martian races. It's not just green and white Martians. There's the red and the yellow. Yeah. And, like, the different sex, the thought stream. There's so many ideas.
Martian culture in general, the way Steve Orlando took the idea of Martian Manhunter as a character, this telepathic shapeshifter, and built a society around that.
Yeah.
One that's built on shapeshifting and telepathy as opposed to our human dynamics.
Right.
Is so... I mean, obviously you can't really imagine how it is, but I imagine this would be the way that is. The importance of the thought stream.
Right. Of, like, this shared area to, like... It's like you literally give yourself, your mind to somebody, you know, through the thought stream. So there's this, like, it's a connection that's further than even, like, saying I'm going to be with you. It's like, here are my thoughts. Like, I can't hide from you unless I block the thought stream, which
I remember saying something once about sonar and, like, whales,
mm-hmm.
and how... they can hear really far away, and it's essentially communication, but the whales can sense the emotion by the way that the sonar is made. So essentially, if I was talking to you in sonar, I'd say, hi, Matt. And by just saying hi, you would also be able to hear that I'm sad.
Oh, that's...
And so that is a theory about why whales are so compassionate towards other animals and empathetic, and dolphins as well.
Because they can feel that, literally.
Yes, because they literally feel emotion as communication. And this is the same way with Martians. Little tangent there. But...
That's so, like, it's so interesting. Like, well... This was a good series. Like, let's go there, because we're already, like, gushing about some of the details and the ideas that are presented. I have to talk about Riley Rossmo in this, because if there's been ever a, like, kind of an FU artist, it's Riley Rossmo. Like, I don't think he handholds at all with the artwork. Like, there's no... Either you're in or you're out. Like, I could understand people being like, oh, God, I can't read Riley Rossmo's stuff. Like, mm-hmm. it's too complicated. It's inconsistent. It's like, but it's all mood and feeling. And, like, you know, if characters' eyes are in offset spots, who cares? Because he's trying to give you, like, the expression. It doesn't matter if it fits on the face. It's that feeling of fear or the feeling of anger in the face that matters.
That's so true. Like, I'm just looking at it right now, and his eyes
mm-hmm.
are, like you were saying, they're so inconsistent across the board, but every single face communicates exactly what it needs to communicate.
Yeah.
And in a way that you wouldn't be able to do if you had just a more realistic style.
Yeah.
So, I think... I mean, I'm just looking at one panel right here where Charn is holding Ashley Adams, and her eyes are pure terror, where his are just anger and rage.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And there's no, like, pupils. It's all, like, shape, you know, that is dictating that, and the shape of the mouth. Ironically enough, all of the characters are distinct, too. Like, you can tell... There's never a question of who you're looking at, but it's really, like... It's a talent that I don't understand. Like, you just have to be so confident in that you're going to put this line down and people are going to go with it. That's what it is.
I couldn't... Yeah. In this whole series, I couldn't get over goddamn Detective Meade's hair.
Right? Exactly. Like, it's just...
Her ridiculous pompadour.
Right?
The whole goddamn time. And it's awesome.
Right. It is. It's so cool. There's a panel here that, like, we have to call out Efko for this. Or I don't know if is he credited as Efko or Ivan in this. But the colorist, Placencia.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But there's a, like, a final judgment moment and where...
Oh, you're talking about...
Yeah.
I was just looking at that page,
like,
actually.
It's... The combination of in focus, out of focus, and the amount of line there is on this page is insane.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many things, but it almost hurts. Like, it's almost blinding light as the reader. Well, like you're looking at it and you're like, oh man, what the fuck is this?
As the Martian Manhunter not executes, but he sentences Charn to the worst torture I think imaginable, like literally tearing his mind apart molecule by molecule and placing it in every single human on Earth, just one fragment.
Ugh.
That's terrifying. And the way it's rendered is terrifying.
Right.
And as it should be.
It's really hard to, it's hard to discern. Like, you're looking at it, and it's done on purpose, because the top of the page where, like, we're seeing what's happening to him is out of focus, and then John is in focus, and everything is crisp and clean. Like, it's deliberately done this way.
I am just actually saying this now, and I can't believe I didn't get it before, but Charn is definitely designed after, like, an ascetic monk.
Oh, yeah.
With the cloak and hoodie, and then, because I was trying to figure out the beads for the longest time. He has, like, a prayer bracelet around his cloak and hood. But, sorry, I had to get that off of my chest. There's so much to read into this.
Well, yeah, and I, like, once again, you talk about the inconsistency is Riley draws for power and for the scene. So, you know, Martian Manhunter is much smaller in frame than Charn, and then when he reveals himself and takes his, like, final form, so to speak, he's huge. He's larger than life, and Charn is, like, even color choice wise is faded away, and Martian Manhunter is this giant imposing figure. So
yeah, and then later on at the very end, you get with the nice little tag of him and Detective Meade playing racquetball and then, like, drinking
at
our house again, and he's back in his
regular
form to get that, I don't know, that reminder of, yes, the Martian Manhunter is here, but he's still John Jones.
Yeah, exactly.
As well. Oh, just, what, so good.
Yeah. Well, and then we have the question, and he had posed this to me, is like, could there be more story with this specific version of the character?
Yeah. Well, because I have, and not even him specifically, too, but the way they end it with both Detective Meade and Ashley Adams, I kind of want to see where they go as well from here.
Right, because,
like, especially Ashley Adams, how does she go back to, what does she do from here?
Yeah, because she's clearly, like, partial Martian power now. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
And I, to my knowledge, she's an original character. Like, I don't know that there's any history with this.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, because the only other Martian character we usually see is McGann Moores.
Who was a white Martian.
And
Ashley was a human.
Yeah, Ashley was a human who was transformed into a Martian, where McGann is from Mars.
Right. I don't know, man. Like, this is, I can't wait to see what I hope will be a Black Label full 12-issue collection of this, with hopefully some design stuff, because I want to see some notes from, like, what was he thinking, and, like, how much came from Orlando? Like, how much was he, like, this is the visual I have in my head, sort of, and Riley having to go, oh, okay, cool.
I would absolutely love to see scripts for this to put next to the pages to see how he transformed Steve Orlando's original script. Because I would also love to see Steve's script, because he seems like the kind of guy that just writes entire pages for, like, one description of one panel.
And now, like, having read this after reading his the little side story he did in Wonder Woman, where they went to the Aztec temples, like, there's definitely some level of mythology that he's got inside of his brain for, like, alien tech and things.
Yeah,
it's like that really interests him. So, be interesting to hear from that. Like, what does that? What else is in there?
because it's very well thought out, but it's very side note-y.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because
it doesn't linger on. It's like, here's this cool alien concept. Let's talk about this forever. It's just like, nope, that's just, like, over there.
Well, and, like, the series itself kind of gets off the rails in the middle, where, like, it does spend a couple issues where you're like, we're just gonna be in Martian culture for a second. Like, it's like, I don't know. Okay, we're gonna spend some time, like,
he goes to the shady bar to track down the mob-esque guys.
And then we go, when we go back to Earth, he's like mind syncing with a lizard, you know? Like, there's, it's there's definitely something. This is going to be an interesting reread. Which, as 12 issues together.
Yeah. Also, we can't get past the fact that even though this is a T comic, there's a full nude sex scene in it. Is it a double page or just a single page? I think it's just a
single page.
But either way, it's a full page sex scene of Martian sex.
Yeah.
Which is,
it's hard to describe, even after seeing it.
I don't know, which parts are where or what is...
Well, and they're metamorphs, right?
Yeah, so... exactly. They could be any shape they want to be, so...
that's a weird note to end on, but I feel like that's probably as good enough as any, right?
Yeah.
I don't know that we can recommend this enough to people, you know, like...
Yeah, and especially being the well-contained 12-issue series that it is, and it doesn't fall short at on the end. What's the famous one that we Nightwing New Order, no, it does not. It ends on, it just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah. It's definitely that thought too, like, that this is going to be one of those instances where when I'm reading the character in other stuff, I'm gonna be like, that's not my Martian Manhunter. Like,
I know, right? Like, he has to have that, he has the perfect stoicness that Martian Manhunter usually has, with just the tinge of snark that he learned from humans, essentially, from being here long enough.
I feel like almost like this was a reflection of Riley Rossmo being a fan of Justice League the animated series.
Yeah, I totally see that influence on this character, and it's once again, I Martian Manhunter is way too underutilized.
Way too underutilized.
Yeah, because when I think about it, what's the movie or comic book? They always have to hold back Superman for some reason. Right. It's always Martian Manhunter and Wonder Woman are the two people holding back Superman.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah,
because. Yeah, people. Yeah, in quotes, to beings.
The two beings.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so, yeah. Anywho, yeah, Martian Manhunter, Steve Orlando, Riley Rossmo.
Read it.
Go get them, boys.
All right. Well, with that, then.
Yeah, I guess we should probably sign off, huh? All right. All right, well, bye.